For over 500 straight weeks, the Sell More Book Show has brought you self-publishing news, tools, and tips, and we're just getting started. Now with rotating co-hosts from the greatest minds in self-publishing, we are truly ready to help you sell more books. I'm Brian Cohen, and on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 502. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward and Self-Publishing Live, joined by Ines Johnson once again from Ines Writes, from Ines Johnson is Having a Breakdown podcast, and the Page Turner Pacing. Ines, I'm so glad, even though we just recorded the other episode 2 seconds ago in our real time, that you were able to join me again this week.
I'm surprised I could. Man, that made it sound like I do a lot of stuff. We didn't even talk about the books.
I know. We didn't. Your many, many books.
Many books. That's me. Many
books.
One
of my favorite stories of you that I loved sharing in webinars in years past was just when you were poring over these old Kalytics reports and you were trying to find that intersection between certain genres so that you could find kind of your, like, your unique window. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a lot of people hearing that story and hearing about that, they might think like, well, I don't have that in me to find this unique structure that is also still understood enough that it won't turn readers off. Like, what do you think, what does like a normal author need to do to kind of figure out like, oh, this is not so far off the beaten path that readers of this genre will still like it?
I think you need to look for the patterns. So The whole thing behind my podcast, Ines Johnson is Having a Breakdown, is because that's what I used to do in television. I was responsible for breaking down scripts. Mm. So I would always be looking for patterns. And one of the reasons that I love Alex from Kalytics is that he looks for patterns too. And so our brains just kind of mesh. So I'm reading these Kalytics reports and I started to see a pattern. Like, if you look for the patterns, if you go on Amazon and you're looking at the top 100, you're looking for what things they have in common. You go to the Nook 100, you go to the Apple bestsellers, you start to see patterns. And you're waiting for that intersection of, because I saw a lot of bully romance and I was like, if the hero is mean to her, I'm going to punch him in his face. So that was going to work for me.
Right.
And I saw these sweet cowboys and I was like, huh, I can do that. So I looked at the patterns until I saw something that was like, yes, that's what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I think that giving that advice as you've given in the past and as you continue to give on Ines Johnson's Having a Breakdown and all your other stuff, I think it's going to help and continue to help authors to see those patterns and to just understand it. So I love it. We talked about it last week, but you got to go check out all of Ines's stuff. InesWrites.com/PTP.
Page Turner Pacing.
I nearly forgot, but last week, I opened up the new Self-Publishing Live is having a live conference in a real place.
I didn't know this.
I know. That's because we're living in the future. So at selfpublishinglive.com, you can find out that we are going to have a live conference October 2024, 15th and 16th, 2024, in my neck of the woods in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We're only selling 90 tickets. It's a relatively small venue, small hotel, but we're, you know, hoping to make this a regular thing. So if you're interested in finding out how to get the Black Friday deal and all of that for splitting those ticket costs across 10 payments, you can go to selfpublishinglive.com. And if you're like, I'm not going to North Carolina, don't worry. We've got a virtual ticket all that good stuff. So you can check out the recordings.
Come to the live, because Brian and I just got back not too long ago from 20 Books Conference.
Yeah.
And it's always like a family reunion. Even if you're seeing people in person for the very first time, it feels like a family reunion. So you get the knowledge, you get that face-to-face time. Mm-hmm. And then we were talking last week about whether you're a lone wolf or whether you're a pack. This is total pack mentality when you come to a conference live.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So see, you're like plugging my thing even without me saying anything, surprising you about it. I love it. Becca Syme will be there. Claire Taylor will be there. Jen LaSalle, Naomi Nakashimi, some real cool people.
Oh my gosh. So fun.
Selfpublishinglive.com. And you can get the virtual ticket if you don't want to go. So, good times. Talking about Claire, previous week's question, Inez, was, what will you miss the most about Claire as the co-host of the Sell More Books show? Bethany Tucker said, I'm going to miss Claire telling everyone to take time off and recharge. Same here.
Yes. And Cody Engdahl said, I'm going to miss Claire's rock solid voice of reason on every subject she speaks on. I promise to rest more in her honor. Thanks, Claire.
Oh, absolutely. Inez, what are you going to miss as a longtime Sell More Book Show listener?
Claire always laughed at your jokes. And I always thought that was the best thing, because sometimes you tell a dad joke and I'm just like, all right. But Claire would always laugh.
Oh, yeah. Very nice of her. Very, very nice of her. I was happy about that, too.
You guys had great comedic timing together.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we'll have to see. Maybe she'll let me do a live Sell More Book Show with her at that self-publishing live. We'll have to see.
That's going to sell the tickets right there.
We'll have to
see. The reunion.
I'll ask her. But we should get into the show proper. Yeah, really interesting story for today. Let's do it. Top story. Buying books from Facebook? Facebook is working with Amazon to allow customers to link Facebook and Instagram to their Amazon account and enable Facebook users to shop directly through Meta's social apps, reports TechCrunch's Sarah Perez. Facebook users will be able to check out with their saved Amazon payment information, and ship to their saved Amazon mailing address, all without jumping from app to app or leaving the Facebook website. Quote, customers in the U.S. will see real-time pricing, prime eligibility, delivery estimates, and product details on select Amazon product ads in Facebook and Instagram as part of the new experience, said Amazon spokesperson Callie Jernigan. In addition, the new in-app shopping feature will enable links to products being advertised on Facebook or Instagram and sold directly by Amazon or by independent sellers on Amazon storefront. Maurice Ramey, CEO of Disruptive Digital, a Meta Ads partner, explained the benefits of the deal in a leak posted on LinkedIn, noting that Meta would gain better targeting by using information from Amazon to show consumers ads. It should also result in better conversion rates, as customers will be able to check out more quickly with fewer steps and less disruption. I had a flashback, Inez. I seem to remember this from a talk I gave in 20 Books, because I know you run a lot of Facebook ads, and there would always be a difference between clicks and people who actually made it to the website. And I was like, what happened? Did they die? Like, how did they not make it to Amazon? And like, Facebook is keeping track of RIP, all these people who didn't make it. If this ended up being available to all authors and all advertisers, which we don't know, maybe that would lead to better results from those clicks, people actually making purchases. But so much of this is speculation. We don't really know how much of this will be available to authors. But what were your thoughts upon hearing this, Inez?
I'm usually a very positive person. And there's some positive things that I can see in here. We're taught to lessen as much friction as possible between whatever call to action we have and the cart.
Yes.
So this seems like a potential for less friction, which looks fantastic. I also love that line about it could potentially improve Meta's targeting.
Yes.
Fantastic. Let's go about that. However, you're basically telling me that I'm going to be allowed to pay Facebook for the ads and Amazon with at least its service fees to talk to each other, but they're not necessarily going to give me the data or the secrets. And that's right. Where I'm kind of like giving them the side eye.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this works because it'll be, because, okay, so both you and I, we do direct sales, right? And we both have learned the power of the purchase conversion and the sales conversion. We've learned the power of the data that we get when we bring someone from Facebook onto our territory, onto our web stores, right? We get so much data. And we started to see, oh my gosh, look at how much data we're given to Amazon. And Amazon gives us checks. And I'm happy, I'm thankful Amazon has changed my life. However, I want this data for myself. I'm paying a price for it. I think that I should be cut in on the data.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, in direct sales, you get a lot more of the data.
Yep.
Not just those pixel conversions, but those email addresses.
Yes.
And that's very key.
And that behavior.
Yes. Yes. So we will have to see. I mean, I'm interested in if this goes through, if it's available for authors, because chances are if it becomes available for someone first, it will be sellers.
Yeah.
And authors will be later on.
Yeah.
As it is with many things in the Amazon ecosystem. So, Ines, assuming books are included in the Facebook to Amazon purchase connection, let's assume everyone gets access, all one big happy family. How big of a deal would this be for authors?
It could be a big deal, Brian, and it could be a big deal because, again, I run a lot of purchase conversion ads, not so much more of the traffic ads. But one of the things that I learned is that I need to put all the information into my, when I'm doing an ad, like on Facebook, like I need to put my pen name in there. I need to put the series title because some people just are not going to come to my store. They trust Amazon. They feel comfortable having given their information to Amazon or to Nook or to Apple, and they're not going to come and put their credit card information on this weird looking place. Fine. So some people just go, they look at my ad and they just go and find it on Facebook. Here comes another lesson friction where they can look at it, see it, and they'll be taken immediately. Oh, they'll see Facebook. They'll see Amazon right there on Facebook. So this is potentially huge because we have trained a lot of readers to look at an ad on Facebook and to go to Amazon and buy it.
Yeah.
This could be a great bridge for us.
Yeah. No, absolutely agreed. Well, we will have to see.
We will have to see.
But second hot potato of wisdom coming at me from you.
So, Brian, do you think selling from within Facebook require advertising dollars, or will authors be able to use this new feature in other ways?
Inez, I have a feeling that if we are going to be able to sell our books from within Facebook, our books on Amazon from within Facebook, maybe there will be some possibility for organic traffic to those books, but chances are the vast majority of people able to use this feature will have to be spending some dollars for it. They will have to be running ads. They will have to be maybe even there will be a way from within Amazon to promote this to Facebook, and it may require dollars or may require a certain amount of sales. So it's unfortunate that, much like all shiny objects, the newer folks with one book out aren't necessarily going to be able to take full advantage of this if it were to come to pass. And that is why you need to not necessarily focus on the cool new marketing thing. You need to focus on, well, let's put the next book out. Let's do the next book better. Let's grow that audience in some way, shape, or form. Because folks who have built over years are more likely to be able to take advantage of this than the folks who have built for days or weeks.
Very fair point.
Thank you. Why, thank you. Oh, my goodness. And as we've got a lightning round here, I'm going to make a sound or two. Pew!
Crickle, crickle. Go, ooh, go, I like lightning.
That. I like that. I like that. Oh, that was really good.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
I've been practicing.
Oh, good, good, good. For weeks and weeks, I'm sure. So the first question I have for you is, according to Goodreads, the Amazon-owned platform will start trying to stop the practice of review bombing. How effective do you think their new focus on stopping review bombing will actually be?
I mean, good on them for trying. That's great. But see, here's, I think, as someone who uses Goodreads as a reader, I get so excited because I've been on Goodreads for 10 years or more. Yeah. And I will go back and I will see a review that I left of a book. And I'm like, I read that book? I don't remember. So I am a true, like, down and out Goodreads reviewer.
Yeah.
But as a Goodreads reviewer, I know when something is being review bombed. I can see it. And I know it's not the true feeling of the book. So it depends. Again, it depends on who's looking at it. If it's a reader who's like new to the platform, then maybe they're going to get turned around. If it's somebody who's been there for a minute and they know what this means when something is getting review bombed. Yeah. So again, I think it's good on them for paying attention to it happening and for trying to make a change.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's better to try to make a change than to not make one at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next lightning round from you to me.
Brian, how important are Goodreads reviews for a book when review bombing is not happening?
So how important are Goodreads reviews? Well, I think all reviews are important, especially now that those Goodreads reviews show up on the Amazon listing for a book as well. But that being said, the best way to get more reviews is to build that list of readers, to build that list of fans, to ask on a regular basis for reviews, whether it be in the back of the book or just every so often in your email. If you're only doing it a couple times a year, you're not doing it enough. And those reviews, just generally Amazon and Goodreads are important, but you know, you don't necessarily need to go all in on Goodreads in order to find success with your books. It's more important to build that loyal fan base. And spending a heck of a lot of time on Goodreads isn't necessarily going to get that done.
I agree with you, Brian.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your agreement. All right. So, Ines, how early should you identify and know your book's genre and why?
I figure out what the genre is before I write the book. I do my market research I'm planning a new series for 2024 right now, and I'm doing the market research. I just looked at the Kalytics report.
Nice.
And I saw what the big keywords are for what I'm about to write. I saw what the tropes were for what I'm about to write. I do this market research beforehand. Again, I come from TV, so you would have to do this because you'd have to get the money in order to pay for the production. So I do it first, but I also do it because that also starts to tell me where the audience is, so I can start looking at the audience, knowing what they are talking about. So for example, let's say I'm writing steamy small town contemporary. I can go put that in on Instagram or on TikTok. I can put in that hashtag and I can see what the viral videos are, and I can see how people are talking about it. And it's a lot of, unfortunately right now, it's a lot of women who are abused, and the hero that she is attracted to right now sees a scar or sees a bruise, and he's like, who did this to you? Yeah. And that's the TikTok, and it goes and it blows up and people go buy the book.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me there's a hunger there for women who need to read characters who are trying to overcome and who will have a protector. So that gives me information that I can use to write the book, to make for the title of the book, for the cover. All of that information. So as soon as I know, hey, I'm about to write a new book or about to craft a new series, I'm looking at the market, figuring it out.
That. Such a great tip, too, to look at the viral videos, TikTok, Instagram, etc. There was a presentation at the last virtual self-publishing live, Emily Carter Child / LJ Andrews, talking about that "who hurt you" trope. Yes. and how it understanding it and getting a better feeling for it has really helped her with her marketing. And so definitely pay attention to what has gone viral. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Another one from you to me.
All right, Brian. Are there any steps you can take to figure out if your book fits in a genre earlier on in the process?
Yes. So if you are trying to figure out what genre your book fits in early on in the process, what Inez described, doing the market research first is probably the best way. Second best way, write your blurb before you write your book. Write that blurb, write that book description, figure out some of those key moments in the book, the inciting incident, kind of those conflicts and cliffhangers that are happening. And then ideally show it to someone who knows that genre inside and out and say, "Hey, is this a good example of that genre?" If they say yes, you're on the right track. If they say no, ask them why, fix it, and then you can write the book.
Perfect.
Thanks. Thank you. I feel so validated by this episode, Inez.
That's what
I love
here
it.
For.
I love it. Oh, good. All right. Final question to you. Mm-hmm. This is right in your wheelhouse. Take as much time as you want with it. So what can authors learn from understanding the structure of TV shows and movies to improve their writing craft?
They can understand how to keep the pages turning. So remember, I come from television. In movies, you have a captive audience. They're in that in the theater. They're in their seat. But in television, you have the remote in somebody's hand. You have snacks not too far away. You probably have somebody to talk to. So we learned a lot of tactics to keep people in their seat with their hands off the remote, eyes focused on the TV. And then we had to deal with the commercial breaks as well. So one of the things people probably hear a lot about when they hear about TV writing are hooks and sequels. Someone wrote a book about that too. Hooks and sequels between sequences or between the commercial breaks. But there's more than that. We also dealt with subplots. So you might have, like, with a mystery, like one of my favorite mystery shows was Castle. So we learned subplots. So we'd have the A storyline, which would be whoever died. That would be the A storyline. But then there was B storyline, which was the love story between Castle and Beckett. And then there might be a C storyline, maybe with Castle's family, and maybe a D storyline with the other officers in the precinct. So we weren't just sitting there for the mystery or for Castle. There was all these interpersonal relationships that were happening as well. So we learned about watching the subplots and interweaving those to keep people in their seats. We learned about pacing, because we had about 6 to 8 minutes to start to tell a story that would then leave you want, it's like a mini cliffhanger to leave you after the commercial break, not changing that channel and coming back and being engaged. We learned to parcel out information that went so fast, because there was a time when you couldn't rewind the TV.
Yeah.
So we had to figure out, like, how much could the brain hold before you had to back off the information a bit. And one of my favorite things that we learned about, one of those things that I didn't know I knew until people were asking me, how'd you do that? Is there's these things called open doors. So an open door is what happens at the end of the episode. So we also do story questions in television, and a story question might be who killed who in the murder. But at the end, you want to answer that story question, but then you want to ask a new one.
Yes.
So maybe you answer, this is the person who killed the person who died, but then Will Castle and Beckett get together. That's one of the subplots. And maybe Castle lets it slip that he's in love with Beckett. Dun, dun, dun. And the ends. Did Beckett hear him? What's she gonna do? So that's how you start to do your open doors. You close one door of your main storyline and then you open another one. So it's kind of like a cliffhanger, but it's not a true cliffhanger because it's asking a completely different question. So I learned all this stuff and more. And this is what I put into my book. So you just sitting down and watching TV. Mm-hmm. And with a pencil or pen in hand and just taking notes, you will learn so much about craft.
I love this. Can't watch a show the right way anymore.
You should not be able to watch a television show just for enjoyment. No, not allowed.
I got a question for you. This is outside of the realm I've been brainstorming, thinking about this. So, I don't know if you heard, the Marvels, Captain Marvel sequel, has bombed, at the box office significantly. So, something like the difference between 153 million for the first weekend of the first one to 47 million for the second one.
Yeah.
I have a theory and I want to run this by you as a person who's worked in TV and film. So something that I was thinking about the original movie. And because this ties into self-publishing, I think. The original movie, you're watching the trailers for that, and it's 90s nostalgia, right? She lands in the Blockbuster Video. You see, like, Nick Fury without his eye patch. You're like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? You see, like, the young Coulson for a second. And you're seeing this mystery of, like, who she is and, you know, while she's fighting the aliens. And everything. But there's a lot of nostalgia. There's a lot of nostalgia. And with these big franchise movies, it sometimes feels like nostalgia is the reason it works. Like Guardians of the Galaxy 3, a lot of people still went to go see that because they had nostalgia for the first movie.
Yep.
When they met Groot and Rocket Raccoon and everything. Meanwhile, the Marvels, there's not necessarily a lot of nostalgia for Captain Marvel herself. And then you've got these characters that were introduced on the TV shows. Miss Marvel and I forget.
Rambo.
I forget what her superhero name is. I don't know what it is. But and it looked like a fun screwball comedy. But there was no nostalgia there. You know? And so like, do you think that if maybe that movie had been a little more epic in scale and maybe still had flashbacks to the 90s and other cool stuff they wanted to learn from the Marvel Universe, it could have done as well as the first one? Or do you think just, hey, wrong place, wrong time, a couple years after COVID, this wasn't going to work no matter what? Like, I'm just trying to think, like, what would have made it work?
I didn't think about that whole nostalgia bit. What I saw as its flaw was that it tried to take the best bits of the things that we love about movies. There was a bit of returning home where Captain Marvel and Rambo, they had issues in the past, and it was addressed in like 5 seconds and they were okay. And there we love a film where there's like dance montage and like that getting to the fun and games of getting to know you. And if you saw the movie, and we're not spoiling anything, when you had those three characters, Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, and Rambo in a closed area, and they were getting to know each other because you know from the trailers that they kept power swapping and they were trying to figure out how this worked. There was this cool little fun and games, like dancing around and swapping the powers, and it just happened, and then like 90 seconds, they got to know each other, they're best friends, and we can move on now. It was a lot of putting the best bits, using it for a small amount of time with very little cohesion. So I think that they knew what they were doing because they were pulling the best bits of film and TV and found family. They were pulling all that, but there was absolutely no cohesion in that film. It just proved that you can take the best bits and it still not work.
You need to earn those moments.
Nothing was earned in that film. And I hate to say it because I'm so girl power.
Yeah.
But it felt like they were just like, well, here's girl power and that's all we need to do.
It's like that moment from the first, from the second Avenger. No, I guess it was the third Avengers movie. Avengers Endgame, where they had the girl power moment. That made no sense. And then, you know, you think about the moment from end of season two, I think it was, of The Boys, where like you've got the three super heroines all beating up the bad Nazi woman, and like it's totally earned because like they all have bad blood with her and they're all just like punching her. And just makes you think about how like Marvel may still not get the whole female thing.
I didn't think of it like that, but you might be right, Brian. Oh,
I feel bad that that's the case, but they, yeah.
Oh.
But the, maybe this will help. I mean, having such a big flop on a property that was this big, might get them thinking.
I hope so.
Might get them thinking. After all that, Inez, we need a question of the week. We need a question of the week. Our top story was about this potential feature on Facebook by being able to buy Amazon books or other products, but we could talk about really anything at all from the episode.
I'm curious, will this bring people because they're not everybody wants to advertise on Facebook?
Yeah.
So I'm curious, will that make you now advertise on Facebook? Or if you are advertising on Facebook, because I'm sure it will be something that you have to turn on in order for it to start to work. Will you turn it on?
Mm-hmm. Love that. Would this Facebook feature with Amazon products make you consider running ads? Ads? And would you turn this feature on if it became available?
Yeah.
Great questions, Inez. You can answer the question of the week. SellMoreBookShow.com or in the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. Inez, you spent two wonderful weeks
here. I did.
We were so happy to have you. Where should people go to find out everything that you are all about?
If you're still not sure about this chick, you can watch me having a breakdown on my podcast, Inez Johnson is Having a Breakdown. If you are convinced and you want to learn more about my techniques that I learned in screenwriting that I now use in my books to make them binge worthy, you can check out my courses at InezWrites.com/PTP. For Pace Turner Pacing, I've got how to write a book in 21 days on there because I come from screenwriting. We wrote scripts really fast. I have How to Write Sweet, How to Write Dirty. I've got a direct sales course on there. So I've got a lot of fun stuff on there.
Awesome. Go check it out. InezWrites.com/PTP. It makes me think of Dick Vitale in the college basketball, like PTP, primetime player. but, you know, I love it for page turner pacing. That's even better. So thank you again for joining us for these 2 weeks. Really appreciate it.
I've had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me, Brian. Dream come true, long time listener.
Woo! Yay! Awesome. I believe next up, for a couple weeks, we're spending some time with Jennifer Hill of the Trope Thesaurus.
She is so awesome.
I know. Love her. She's great. So we'll have her. We'll have Becca Syme. We'll have some more wonderful people here the rest of the year. So thank you for listening. Thanks for sticking with us on Sell More Book Show 3.0. For Inez Johnson, I'm Brian Cohen. Have a great week of book selling, everybody. And I'll talk to you next week for episode 503. Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling!